From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst.
Every week, we bring you the best in Latin alternative music, and we also throw in a healthy dose of cultural conversations.
Today, we're doing something a little different. We're going to have conversations about issues that concern you, political, cultural issues that are happening in the Latino world that maybe just aren't on your radar. We're still going to listen to some great music, but we're going to do mostly conversation today.
And to do that, we've invited two bloggers to come and talk to us about the stories that they're covering.
Julio Varela joins us from WGBH in Boston. He blogs for Latino Rebels. And Marisa Trevino blogs for Latina Lista. She joins us from KERA in Dallas, Texas. Me vas a volver medio loco.
To kick off this week's show, Jasmine selected a song called La Cultura de Información by the Spanish band La Banda Municipal de Polo Norte.
Let's start with a little bit of information, pop culture information. The first story we're going to talk about today is brought to us by Julio Varela. He's been covering it on Latino Rebels.
I like the Rebels.
Latino Rebels.
Sí.
You've been talking a lot on your blog about an upcoming show on Lifetime called Devious Maids.
Devious Maids is a new show co-produced by Mark Cherry, who is the producer of Desperate Housewives.
Right.
And co-executive produced by Eva Longoria. Last year, the show was pitched to ABC, and it wasn't picked up by ABC. And there was a lot of social media chatter about the fact that this was a show about five Latina maids. And it's a satire. It's based on a Mexican telenovela. You know, you get what you get. It's a Desperate Housewives type of show. And all the intrigue and, you know, sex and murder and all everything that goes with sort of a Desperate Housewives type of show. The show has been getting a lot of chatter on social media because Lifetime picked it up, and it's going to be premiering on June 23rd. And the trailer's just like,
it's like a guy's sexual maid fantasy.
There's been a lot of talk about whether this is appropriate, whether it's creating stereotypes. And one blogger, who's Tanisha Love Ramirez, basically saying that it was a lost opportunity for Eva Longoria. Within 3 days, Eva Longoria wrote a response to Tanisha's piece defending it. And so you can see this all in the HuffPost. You can see it on LatinoRebels.com. We've been covering it.
When Eva Longoria answered that criticism, how did she defend the show?
She basically defended the show in saying that, you know, not all Latinas are maids. And she understands it. And she's trying to address it from a creative perspective. She basically says, you know, stereotypes are constructed and perpetuated by those who believe in them. I choose not to. As an executive producer, I choose to break the cycle of ignorance by bringing to light something we have not seen before, a deeper, more complex side to the women who live beyond the box that some choose to put them in. The only way to break a stereotype is to not ignore it. The stereotype we are grappling with here is that as Latinas, all we are is maids, and yet this is a show that deconstructs a stereotype by showing us that maids are so much more.
What she's saying is also is that people that are reacting really negatively, there's like an element of classism, you know, like what is wrong with saying I'm a maid? Is that not a dignified, you know, todo trabajo es digno. This is a dignified form of work.
And I need to point out that it premieres on June 23rd and no one's really seen the show. So again, this is a controversy based on an idea, a concept, and a trailer, a racy trailer.
Well, that's not 100% accurate.
Okay.
Because the editor-in-chief of Cosmo for Latinas, which is, you know, basically that demographic, right? Michelle Herrera Mulligan saw the pilot. And so a week later, this is basically what she said. She says, you know, I've watched the show and I've genuinely sad to see that I disagree. It's not a complex portrait. It's an insulting disgrace. I believe it does a tremendous disservice to the 20 million plus Latina female population living in the United States. It's created this conversation. Michelle has seen the pilot, and this whole issue of complexity and what Eva says, Eva Longoria says, Michelle really slams it. So it's caused a lot of conversation, particularly among young Latina professional women who are online.
Marisa, what has your blog Latina Lista seen online about this?
Well, I looked at the trailer online, and to be honest, it immediately brought back memories I had, because I had a similar argument with Univision at one time, with them trucking in all these telenovelas, you know, from Mexico and South America, and basically portraying women like this. And it's not the argument. I mean, I think Eva Longoria's argument is kind of pointless, because it's not the fact that these are maids. It's how they portray them as
maids. The sexualization.
Maids. Yes. And mm-hmm. it would be fine if they were average maids. But, you know, these maids are not, most maids don't dress up for, you know, the runway, you know, when they go to work. So I just, you know, I've seen this argument before, and it's just pointless. And I think it's right for Latinas to start calling out, because on the one hand, I understand where they're coming from. This is an all-Latino cast. You know, that's rare in Hollywood. And to them, I understand that's something that they want to promote. But I think we really do have to work away from these stereotypes and start interjecting how we want to be portrayed.
And that's more or less what when I saw the trailer, I also thought, you know, I mean, if you have friends who work in the domestic service industry, yeah, please tell those stories. But I mean, the people I know who are working in the domestic service industry aren't wearing stiletto heels. They're not wearing fake eyelashes. They don't wear the push-up bras. You know, a lot of them are exhausted from not having a weekend off in many years. And I'm talking about concrete people that I know, that it's an exhausting life. There's a lot of exploitation. And yeah, it's just the sexualization of it. I don't know, Fee, what...
Well, this, you know, I'm going to push back a little bit, not because I support the idea, but just for the sake of...
Do you support bras?
Just for the sake of conversation. You know, it's a fantasy, and some would call it an escapist fantasy. And in an earlier conversation we had, you mentioned it can be an aspirational fantasy. And people who are concerned about having...
But whose fantasy?
The writer's fantasy?
I mean, doesn't your fantasy...
You bring to it... Each viewer will bring what their fantasy is to it.
But the writer's a white Anglo male.
Well, here's the thing. There's a couple of things about that I'm going to push back on the pushback. Number one, this probably wouldn't be an issue if there were like 15 Latino shows on television right now, right? So what's happened now is what I think is that we're placing a lot of expectations, you know, on Ava, because there really isn't many other shows out there right now. So anytime there's an all-Latino cast, it's a big deal. So I understand the pressure that she's probably facing, because as a creative person, do you have to be responsible for, you know, the community of 55 million? I would say no. But because there's not a variety... See, Devious Maids could probably work if there was a Latino Bill Cosby show right now, or if there was a Latino action hero in CSI, which there used to be, but... if there was a Latino president in, you know, in the West Wing, like it was like 10 years ago.
You're referencing Latino actor Martin Sheen's portrayal of the U.S. president in NBC's The West Wing.
I think the issue of sexualization, and you're absolutely right, the creator is a white male Hollywood producer who said to the New York Post, he said, when people view things merely through the prism of race, you can't win. Because everyone has something in their head that they believe. At some point, you just throw up your hands and go, look, I'm doing the best that I can. That's the conversation. I do applaud a lot of like very strong-minded Latina bloggers who are taking the lead here. And I don't think they're anti-Eva Longoria. They're saying that enough is enough.
Can we really point the fingers at English language media when, if you turn on Spanish language media, we're seeing exactly the same thing, and probably even worse.
I mean, shouldn't we take care of our own?
I'm not saying that's right either.
So should the conversation be expanded into include, you know, representation at all levels? I mean, why single this show out? I understand why it's singling out, because it's on English language media. But, you know, if we're going to be critical, I think we do really have to look at the broader Latino media landscape. And as much good as they do, sometimes the Spanish language media just really pours it on a little thick.
Those are the shows that they're importing, you know, and not necessarily creating here in the U.S. I really think this is kind of the time for the U.S. Latino identity to emerge. And we have to define what that is. Do we want it to be the sexualization of our women and, you know, our young girls? Or do we want to be presented in a different light that is uniquely our own? And I think this kind of conversation needs to start happening, because more and more, as the Latino demographic grows in popularity and attractiveness to the business community, they're going to be taking advantage of us in ways to, they think, appeal to us, but really are appealing to their vision of who Latinos are in the U.S.
Well, it's not over, and it's certainly something to watch. The premiere is June 23rd. I don't know if I'm going to watch it, but I'm going to watch the reaction.
You're going to watch it.
Felix, you've already outed yourself as a supporter of Toledo.
Not even close.
You saw the trailer. You're going to watch it.
Not even close. And believe it or not, we have a song to go along with.
You know, I thought about Café Tacuba's Labios de Jaguar. Have you guys heard that song?
Yes. It's great. I love it.
It's a song about, you know, Rubén Albarrán is singing about, he has this very rich girlfriend and he falls in love with her maid. Yo tenía una novia muy refinada, de buenos modales, muy afrancesada. Ella tenía una sirvienta de rasgos almecas, de pinche gata. A mi coraje me daba que así le gritara. Dejé de querer a esa puta europea. Muy al contrario, a su casa dejé de ir, solo para ver a la Tajín princesa.
Next, a topic that's been covered by Marisa on Latina Lista, and it's the story of unaccompanied minors crossing the U.S. border from mostly Central American countries. Marisa, tell us what you've seen. Tell us about the numbers and what is it that you're finding?
Well, I've been following this issue for quite a while, ever since long before the drug cartel violence exploded in Mexico. We were hearing stories of kids trying to reunite with their parents who had come to the U.S. and were working and living here without papers. And most of the time, these children were left behind with relatives. And for whatever reason, whether it be due to family violence or social violence or just missing their parents, these children by themselves would undertake these long journeys from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, through Mexico, by themselves to get to their parents. And what really brought this issue home to me was seeing a picture of a brother-sister. The girl was 4, the boy was 6, and they had made it all the way from Honduras. I don't know if they were traveling with a relative or not, but if they're not traveling with their parents, they're considered unaccompanied minors. And so they had made it all the way to the border, and that's when Border Patrol got them and took them in. And at that time, there were no policies really on how to deal with them, and so they just handed them over at that time to the Mexican authorities. But the more we looked into this, we just saw that these children, even though everybody's saying, you know, the numbers are dropping with undocumented immigrants coming across the border, the number of children are rising.
And that's a tricky statistic because, in fact, the number of undocumented apprehensions at the border has decreased. But according to a study by the Pew Charitable Trust, the number of undocumented children who have crossed the border, unaccompanied minors, has tripled since 2008.
It's just heartbreaking, and it's a humanitarian crisis that I just don't think the United States is paying enough attention to. Because once these children are located and taken into the system, Border Patrol basically, right now, they can keep them for as long as they want, even though they're supposed to hand them over to, I think it's the Office of Refugee Services. It doesn't always happen.
In the course of your reporting, what numbers are we looking at? What were the numbers before, and how has it increased?
In 2012, there were about 24,481 children that were apprehended. And before that, the numbers were like 13,000. And by government estimates, it can climb to over 24,000 within the next year.
And Marisa, I think what you're saying about media looking into this and or lack of media coverage is really interesting, which is why we love what you do. Governor Rick Perry from Texas called it a humanitarian crisis, actually. And there was recently a study, which we'll link to on our website, npr.org/outlatino, talking about the most violent cities in the world, the 30 most violent cities. And if you look at the media coverage of violence and what this list talked about, it's very surprising because overwhelmingly every city on this list was in Latin America. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have Jamaica, you have South Africa, but we're talking about homicide rates. The most violent city in the world is in Honduras. And you have El Salvador cities in there, you have Brazilian cities in there. Of course, Mexico is in there many times. But were you to gauge just by media coverage, I don't think you would get that picture of how violent Latin America has, how much the violence has escalated in the last few years.
No, well, a lot of the news bureaus have been shut in Central and South America. And so we're not getting that flow of information like we used to.
Let's pull the curtain back a little bit on this reporting process. You know, how did you dive into this story? Where did you get your info? And in terms of what their journey is like to get here, how did you find that out?
Oh, when I first started Latina Lista, and that was like back in 2004, it started with stories coming out of South Texas of families being detained in the immigrant detention centers. And along with those stories, we were hearing stories of children who were by themselves. And it was the lawyers down in South Texas who were seeing this, and they were actually the only ones at the time who had access to these children. And they were coming out with these stories of, you know, crossing the desert in Arizona, and they would end up in Texas, or crossing through Mexico, battling gangs, seeing just like rapes and murders happen before their eyes. And these are all young children that, you know, younger than 16. And then Sonia Nazario, the LA Times writer, she wrote a Pulitzer Prize winning book called Enrique's Journey, which really chronicled what these kids and other immigrants go through coming to the U.S. from Central America. And since then, I think there's been a higher sense of awareness on the issue. There was just no let up with these kids coming in search of not so much the American dream or a better life. They just wanted, a lot of them wanted to reunite with their family members.
And on the note of being, you know, leaving because of extraneous circumstances, recently we've seen in the news that there's been a Honduran gang truce announced, mm-hmm. and El Salvador has also, there was a truce brokered, I believe, by the church. The church brokered a truce between gangs. You know, gang warfare is just really out of control. I mean, it's not officially called a civil war, but I mean, it's an ongoing war among gangs in Central America. I mean, I wonder if that's going to have an impact.
When you consider U.S. immigration policy, the U.S. had a direct impact on the growth of gangs in El Salvador, because we were deporting all these Mara Salvatrucha gang members. And I just posted a study on Latina Lista that found that I think there are 5 million people in El Salvador who belong to gangs. And they trace them back to this period when we just kept on deporting all these gang members back. And a lot of these gang members, I say a lot, I would say a portion of these, because I don't know the exact number, they were dreamers. They were dreamers in the U.S. They came over as young children. They grew up in the U.S. And because of their criminal activity, they were immediately deported back to El Salvador, a country they didn't know anymore. And so they formed a new family. And this is the repercussions of it. And those gangs are current threats to these children who are wanting, they don't want a part of gang life. And so they're coming, you know, towards the U.S.
And I have to say that as a father of two, my kids are 9 and 12, just the thought of children that young and even younger coming by themselves on that journey is just, I can't even, it's just too harrowing. I can't even think about it. So we want to thank you for your reporting on that, and we'll keep reading that because obviously it's an issue that will continue to change as things develop. The song that came to mind for Jasmine and me when we were talking about this story is the song Tres Veces Mojado from Los Tigres del Norte, which talks about crossing three borders to get here to the United States.
Cuando me vine de mi tierra El Salvador con intención de llegar a Estados Unidos, sabía que necesitaría más que valor. Sabía que a lo mejor quedaba en el camino. Son tres fronteras las que tuve que cruzar. Por tres países anduve indocumentado. Tres veces tuve yo la vida que arriesgar. Por eso dicen que soy tres veces mojado. El mismo idioma y el color reflexioné. ¿Cómo es posible que me llamen extranjero?
En Centroamérica, dado su situación tanto política como económicamente, ya para muchos no hay otra solución que abandonar su patria, tal vez para siempre. El mexicano da dos pasos y aquí está. Hoy lo echan y al siguiente día está de regreso. Eso es un lujo que no me puedo dar sin que me maten o que me lleven preso.
Es lindo México, pero cuánto sufrí. Atravesarlo sin papeles es muy duro. Los 5,000 kilómetros que recorrí, puedo decir que los recuerdo uno por uno. Por Arizona me dijeron cruzará y que me aviento por en medio del desierto. Por suerte un mexicano al que llamaban Juan me dio la mano que si no estuviera muerto. Ahora que al fin logré la legalización, lo que sufrí lo he recuperado con creces. Les dedico mi canción y a los que igual que yo son mojados tres veces.
Next up, talk to us, Julio, about the CORE's Puerto Rican parade controversy, which you've been covering extensively on your blog.
The Puerto Rican Day Parade out of New York City, which is probably the most popular parade in New York City right now, is getting criticized for sanctioning an official Coors Light Puerto Rican parade beer that shows sort of a wavy Puerto Rican flag on the bottom with the logo of the National Puerto Rican Day Parade, saying, you know, this is officially sanctioned beer. Now, it sounds kind of silly, but there's a group called Boricuas for a Positive Image that they saw it, they organized, they went into action, they started using social media, started raising the campaign to the community. We were one of the first, I believe we were the first English language Latino outlet to report it. And it went viral. It went on NBC Latino, Huffington Post, New York Daily News. And the parade wasn't talking. There was people starting to talk about, why is Coors Light sponsoring putting a Puerto Rican flag on the can? The Puerto Rican parade organizers were saying it's not a flag and we would never put a flag on the can. It just was nuts.
It's a full-blown controversy now.
Yeah, it was like one of those things that, like, the campaign started on a Friday, and then by, like, the next Thursday, Coors pulled the production of the can. But it does raise a lot of issues. The issue about the flag on the beer can was probably sort of the spark plug, but it led to a more complex conversation about the board of the parade and who's authorizing this. And what's the relationship between the marketing agency and the nonprofit? And, you know, who's pocketing the money? And are they exploiting our, you know, it was a really interesting story.
Well, and also, I mean, what a lot of people found in bad taste, in poor taste, is that, well, first of all, among Hispanics, Puerto Ricans have the highest rate of alcoholism and of diabetes. And the other thing that was found in really poor taste is that the theme of this year's parade is health, but I think it sounds more like salud, you know, because...
No, salud, and, you know, and salud has different, you know, obviously salud. And there's also bigger issues here, because what social media is doing, and this is the problem with all these organizations that they're not getting yet. 10 years ago, someone just would make a phone call or write a letter. Organizing and speaking out against products was much harder to do. So what's happened is because you have now Twitter and Facebook, and you have blogs, and you have, you know, networks, and you have everything, that it just hits you like a ton of bricks. And the organizations that need to respond quicker, and this is a perfect example of the, you know, the National Puerto Rican Day Parade Committee just is stuck in the Stone Ages.
We should mention, Coors has a tumultuous history with the Hispanic community.
I have to say that when I first read this story, I mean, I went to college, started in 76, and at that time, there was a boycott against Coors Beer being made mostly by the Chicano community out in the Southwest for discriminatory hiring practices at the Coors plant in Colorado, some of the right-wing activities that were considered anti-minority, sometimes homophobic. To me, hearing Coors again involved in something like this, it just made me kind of shake my head. It's like, really, guys, you haven't figured this out yet? What happened as a result of that, and I experienced this as well, in order to improve their image, they pumped a lot of money into Latino organizations and communities around the country, sponsoring parades, sponsoring events. So they did take a step back and, okay, let's try to improve this. Let's try to figure out a way to make this better economically and culturally. And it's not surprising to me that they canceled the beer.
And guys, I just want to bring up that Coors did release a statement about this. And what they said is MillerCoors has a strong history of supporting the U.S. Latino community and has provided major funding for higher education scholarships, job training programs, and workforce readiness initiatives that have positively affected the community for decades. And they go on to say, we apologize if the graphics on our promotional packaging inadvertently offended you or any other members of the Puerto Rican community.
No, but here's the other thing. They did this 2 years ago as well. They had to pull down these ads.
Emboricuate,
which was a play on words for emborrachate. That's what people, that was the customer perception of that ad.
And for listeners who don't speak Spanish, emboricuate roughly translates into
Puerto Ricanize yourself.
Yeah, but it sounds almost identical to emborrachate, which, get drunk.
Right.
But as with Devious Maids, there's a question of personal responsibility. I mean, shouldn't there be an equal amount of fingers pointed at the organizers of the Puerto Rican Day Parade, which it sounds like there is. There's a lot of fingers being pointed in all directions.
This has actually been a very healthy consequence of all this.
Absolutely.
And as a nonprofit board, you know, you kind of have to be transparent. And I think it's great that that's happened.
As you said, this is an ongoing conversation, and it can't go wrong when you have a conversation about stuff like this. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. We've run out of time.
And it's our pleasure.
Thank you so much to our guest, Julio Varela from Latino Rebels and Marisa Treviño from Latina Lista.
Julio, where can people read your blog?
LatinoRebels.com. We're also on Facebook at Latino Rebels and also on Twitter at Latino Rebels. And we also have a Tumblr page. Just search Latino Rebels.
Oh,
we're everywhere.
I'll have to do that. And Marisa, where can we read your blog?
Latinalista.com, and Latinalista's on Facebook and Twitter as well.
And now we're going to play a song that Julio suggested that I think is perfect for this conversation about identity and flags. It's called Patria from Ruben Blades, or Ruben Blades, however you want to say it. We want to remind our listeners that you can hear all of the songs that we played on our show on our website at npr.org/altlatino.
Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where the conversation always continues. And Julio and Marisa, please chime in. I know our listeners are always leaving really interesting comments on our website on npr.org/altlatino. So I hope you guys can, you know, get a conversation going with Julio and Marisa.
I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garz.
This has been Alt Latino.